Real One.
Arthur Morris, Real One. Where were you born, please?
I was born at Mitchmer Norton in Somerset.
Which year was this?
On the 18th of July, 1920.
Did you go to school in Midsummer Norton?
Yes, I did.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
Did you get a job?
Yes.
Doing what?
As a boy working in the coal mines.
What was it like working in the coal mines in those days?
Very, very hard work. And not too much recompense.
What kind of work specifically were you doing?
Taking the coals from the coal face, putting it in small trolleys, and pushing it to an area to be taken to the bottom of the shaft to be lifted to the top.
Where did the hardest work come in?
Getting the coal from the actual coal face, resting on the height of the coal seam, which invariably was not much more than 2'6", if at all, and sometimes 2 foot only. And in getting the coal from the coal face, one wore what was known in the trade as a gus rope and chain, which was a piece of thick rope around the waist, remembering that we didn't wear shirts, it was shorts or trousers and no shirt, with a lamp in the front of a form of homemade cap. Hanging on the front of the face, front of the head, which was known as carbide lamps. Because the Somerset coal mines are non-gas mines. It was very difficult and hard work, obviously, but as far as the payment was concerned, I well remember earning as much by doing a little overtime in the afternoon, say a couple of hours, and after 5 days' work, I actually took home to my mother more than my dad earned in his job.
What was his job?
He was a steel worker, which worked in a local steel garage type place in Taunton, in Mitchmer Norton itself.
Did you ever have any accidents in the coal mine?
Personally, no. I knew of many, but I had nothing to myself.
What were the main dangers in doing the work?
Well, getting back and forward with the little trolley, which is a low face trolley, about maybe a foot high altogether, and you had to pull it with this gus rope around your stomach, with a chain that went through underneath between your legs and joined on to the little trolley. And in a height of 2 foot, you can imagine what it was like trying to get it back and forward when loaded, which was quite a hard job, to say the least. But then there was nothing else in those days for a boy other than a skilled job, which I didn't have any knowledge of anyway.
But what type of accidents did you hear of?
Well, there were quite a few different types of accidents. Falling rock was one of the great ones, falling rock from the roofs, which was held up by what they call pit props, which had a wedge over the top of them, and they were placed at, say, every 3 or 4 feet in every direction. on top of that, all the stone that was taken away between the coal in the face was actually thrown back to fill up the area which had been cleared of coal. So in actual fact, you had something going underneath the empty ceiling-to-roof type of space, which helped. But there were occasions when a pressure from the above, which were, of course, naturally hundreds and hundreds of meters, but the area being so small, the earth stopped it from crumbling, and every once now and again, you had to fill up with stone to ensure that the roof didn't cave or there was little bits falling from it.
Were there any problems with gas?
There are no gas in Somerset mines.
Why was that?
That's beyond my knowledge. I only know that there are no gas-held mines in Somerset. I worked in a place called Midsomer Norton. Just after I left there, I went for a little bit greater money and went to a place called Old Mills, which was also the same type of place. And then from there I knew and stayed laterally in a mine called New Rock. This was the period of my after school days from 15 until I was called up in the army in 1939.
What kind of rock surrounded the coal?
It was resting on how deep the seam was and how deep down the shaft went, that the type of coal was either brittle type coal or soft coal, in which case the stones was sort of a granite type, but it rested on what type and how thick the seam was that told you what type of stone was going to be there in between, or rather around the coal, because coal seams are so that you may get a 4-foot seam of coal with a 2-inch seam of rock or soft clay type material in between it, which gave you two small seams of, say, a foot high. But then when you're putting up your props or shafts to hold up the ceiling, that was not too difficult. More difficult for the what was known as the carters that were taking it, like myself, back and forward the face to an area 20 or 30 yards away where you had a steel flat, like a flat sheet, made of solid steel, about 1/4 inch, and that's where you tipped your little trolley over with the coals and went back with an empty one to fill it up again, and that's your job, back and forward for an 8-hour shift with a break for food in between.
How many actual miners were you servicing?
Invariably only two. There are two what is known as breakers and two carting chaps, as they're known. That's two that pull the coals back and forward from the two breakers in the front that works with their own little pick helves, picks to pick the coals out and throw it on the side with short-handled shovels ready for their carters to come and pick it up, put it in the trolleys and take it out to the flat sheet.
Would you have preferred to have been a breaker rather than a carter?
Well, I'm sure I would have, but having said that, the elder gentlemen, men, whatever you like to call them, that are working on the face, of course, are a lot older, and you would never, as I ever remember, having a young man or a boy actually doing the facial work. In other words, getting coal away from the face.
Why not?
I think it's considered as not a boy's job.
Because of strength?
Well, It's difficult to answer that particular question, not because of strength. It's the face itself is obviously larger than the area that you're going to have to work in as far as getting the coals out. The actual face could be 3 or 4 foot high, but the actual, or rather the pulling in and out area would be could be 3 or 4 foot high, but the actual coal seam, the face, if it's known as a large seam, then it could be as much as 4 or 5 or 6 foot high. And you'd have, say, two parts, a top part and a lower part, of different heights. Bottom part being maybe about 3 foot, and the top seam being about 1 foot 6. So they had a lot more work, place to and movement to work in, different heights. But that does not apply until you get into the huge big seams, when obviously instead of crawling on your stomach or your sides, working with this little trolley that I mentioned about earlier, where you would be able to throw it from the face so far up, and somebody else, your other mate, so to speak, there was two of you on this job, taking it from the face to the flat sheet. But they are not allowed to put up the props or get the coal out. They have a specific job, which is moving the coal from the face to the flat sheet, and from there in their trolleys down to the main area where the trolleys all go out, taken out to where it is taken up to the top of the shaft, in other words, up on the top of the pit shaft.
So did you more or less have to work your way up to be a breaker?
Well, yes, of course. If you were there in the job or in that particular type of work for any long period, invariably all carters, because of their youth, their activities, they're quicker, they're fitter, and they are used to get the coals back and forward, known as carting chaps. The breakers are the one that breaks the coal up in the front, and they are usually elderly gentlemen.
Was it unhealthy work?
Well, I would say that coal mining has always been an unhealthy type of job. But then in a place like Midsomer Norton area, in those days, in the 30s, there was very, very little for any boy coming out of school, if he didn't stay in and get a greater education, and because of the fact that he came from a large family, maybe, would have to go to assist the family in the cash flow.
But did you suffer from any complaints through being down below?
No, no. The only thing that I ever got was little scratches or small cuts on the backbone, which I still have today. One or two little blue marks that have turned over the years. But if you look as an ex-miner, then you would immediately have the idea that that boy was sometime in a coal mine, because he's got the marks to prove it on his spine going down the middle of his back.
Did you give them any kind of special name?
No, no. It was one of those things in life as a pit boy. You had your cuts and grazes, and of course, again in those days, especially in Midsomer Norton, there were no baths on top of the pit shaft to be able to go. You had to go home as black as you did when you came up from the shaft.
What was the pay, do you remember?
In what respect?
What were you paid?
Well, I was one of the go-getters, as far, because I came from a large family, and therefore I was after taking as much home as I could to my mother and father.
So you're on piecework?
I was more or less. All carting chaps, in actual fact, are invariably on piecework.
How much could you bring home?
Well, even in the early days of the period that I talked about, for the 4 or 5 years, I had taken as much in those days as about £50 a week, which of course was a terrific salary, but I had to stay down in the afternoon after the closing time with my chief breaker, which was always an elder one, elder chap than myself, and we would work and get all the coal out from the face after the breakers had left, which meant that they would tell the powers to be at the top, that's, or at the bottom of the shaft, the fellow that stayed there in charge to press the necessary buttons for the thing to move up and down, would say that so-and-so and so-and-so are still working, so that they would know exactly at all times who was staying behind and who wasn't. But we would invariably clear all of ours in my particular shaft, and therefore we would come up probably at about 3 o'clock, 2 hours, 2.5 hours after the normal time, which in those days, of course, overtime, you're talking about somewhere about 12 to 16 hours a week overtime. And that was a hell of a lot of money in 1935 to 39. And as a matter of fact, I do remember taking home on occasions much, much more than my dad earned, what he got in a week.
So how much did you get per tub?
It wasn't worked on a tub, it was worked on a tonnage basis, which was measured because there were chalk marks put on the actual trolley that went up in the shaft, and that was pushed to an area nearby for weighing. The trolleys were all of the roughly the same weight anyway, so they worked the thing when it was full and done the necessary calculation on the spot. And that was recorded from the mark on the actual trolley where that coal came from, so they would know the two breakers and the two carting chaps.
So it didn't depend on the quality of the coal either?
No, no. When I say that, I mean, we didn't think of the quality of the coal. The fact was that it was coal and not stone or dust, which was not allowed anyway. It was all coal, and invariably it was reasonably sized pieces anyway.
How much was it, a ton or a hundredweight or whatever?
Well, in those days, I don't quite remember, but it was, of course it was cheap in that. When I say cheap, it was cheap as far as us getting it out, and if we got the value of the wallet we had brought out for sale, then of course we have probably picked up £300 or £400, but that is not being so in business, and in those days obviously the same as what they are today, I would say, with respect. They're trying to get as much they can for their output, but keeping a reasonable price for the ones that are getting it.
Do you find things in the coal, like fossils or whatever?
No, no.
Were you in a trade union?
No.
Was anybody in a trade union?
There might have been, but we, never being so young, we didn't go into details of whether there was any unions or what. At the latter parts of the period that I was in the shaft, sort of in the early 39, then of course, before I came into the war, obviously there were unions, but we didn't worry too much about it when we started.
Did you know anything, were there any strikes?
Not that I'm aware of, not in those days.
Did you know anything about the owners of the pits?
Very little.
So did you?
It was just known by name, and maybe I would have known, obviously, at the time. But the years have passed on, and of course, I don't recollect the actual names of the individuals.
Did you work for an individual or for a firm?
No, for a colliery. The actual colliery itself. Like the one I worked in was Norton Hill Colliery.
Were there many differences between the different collieries?
Oh yes, different heights of seam, coal faces. Some had more up-to-date trolleys to get the coal away from the bottom of the face that you worked in out to the shaft where the coal was lifted in a vehicle to get it to the top, in other words, the shaft itself.
Which colliery did you prefer to work in?
I think probably the one called Old Mills, I would think, which was about, I think, the second that I worked in.
What was so good about that one?
Well, higher seams. Therefore, I didn't have the crawling to do.
How were coal miners regarded by the local people?
Well, obviously, it was looked upon as a low-class type job. But it was a job, of course, that had to be done. And although, as far as the money was concerned, it was good money for those who wanted to work.
Was there any jealousy over what you were earning?
Well, I don't think that really it came into much discussion. You had a wage packet which was sealed, and the money that you had earned was inside, so they didn't know what you were getting.
What did your family think of your being a coal miner?
And in those days, I came from a large family, and I don't think I probably mentioned that, but I came from a family of 9 children. And although my dad was a very hard-working man, although he said laughably maybe as it is, he probably had his pleasures, but at the same time he worked hard for it, and I never remember him out of work. And I wasn't the only one in the family, because I had an elder brother who was also working in the colliery for a period of that time, but went for better things in his life, and in actual fact was in the end a butler to Sir Charles Morley, the stocking manufacturer. So he went from a coal mine to butler. So it's a case of if you have got it, then fair enough. But if you haven't, then you've got to take the best thing that's coming.
Now, you told me you were called up in 1939. If you can take the story from there, please.
Yes. Well, 1939, I was called up as a member of the 4th Battalion of the Somerset Light Infantry, the TA unit. And from there...
You'd been in the TA before you were called up?
Yes, I joined as a boy, as a bugler.
When did you join the TA?
1935.
Why did you join for the TA?
Well, because I fancied playing a bugle, as I hadn't played an instrument in my life, and thought that I would have a go at this. And it was something to do once or twice a week, as they did with the Territorial Army.
Did you get paid for it?
You had your drills, and you got paid for camping period, once a year, 2 weeks, wherever the camping was, and you all joined up and went to this particular spot, wherever, and did your 2 weeks, which you got paid for under the normal army rates at that time, which of course was comparatively low, if I may say, but although I don't remember how much it was, but it was low in comparison to the job that I had been doing.
And when you joined the TA, which unit did you join?
The 4th Battalion, the Somerset Light Infantry.
Did you learn soldierly skills as well as bugling in the TA?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What did you learn pre-war? What type of things did you learn pre-war?
Sorry, in what respect do you mean did I learn other things? Normal military drill and stuff like that.
And weapon training?
No, not as a bugler. It was purely our main function as buglers in those days before the war was, of course, bugle practice, whereas others did weapon training, etc., etc. And then getting ready for things like Armistice Sunday, where one would do maybe two church services or three. I remember doing three on a Sunday at one occasion, Midsummer Norton Cenotaph in the morning after church, and then Shepton Mallet in the early afternoon, or it could have been evening, and Wells Cathedral in the afternoon.
When you were called up, what happened to you then?
When I was called up in 39, I went to, naturally, to the drill hall and moved from there. And I think our first place we went was a place called Havant in near Portsmouth, where I by this time was still bugling and took our normal job with the company, headquarter company, whatever we were doing or whatever they were doing. And it wasn't always bugling. We had to go on guards, doing guards on specific places. And I well remember in Havant going to a place not so very far away called Titchfield, where it was an RAF balloon barrage centre. And there we were on guard on the main gate. Also, in that area between Havant and Titchfield, there are three or four large fortresses. And I think I still remember their name. One was after my own, Fort Arthur, Fort Wallington, and two other forts, which just leaves me at the moment their name, Fort Nelson. And I remember serving in one of those because on guard, I remember drawing a picture in the guard room, which I understand and have learnt quite recently, within the last 6 months, I think, that the picture, the drawing, is still on the wall in Fort Arthur.
Had war been declared by now?
Yes. This was in the early days of 39.
Well, war was declared on the 3rd of September, 39. How did you feel when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
Well, obviously not very happy, and didn't really know what to expect.
Did you stay in the Havant area, or was there any question of your going to France?
No, there was no question at all at that time.
Did you stay in the Havant area?
Yes, for some number of months, if I remember rightly. We went on guard to one or two of the forts, and also on the main gate of the Titchfield Barrage Balloon Centre, Royal Air Force.